I didn't know that.
All right, so Janice, it's a misdemeanor to share contents of a closed session meeting. And as a, quote, experienced board member who's been on this board since 1995, I would think that you would know that.
And moving on. We have the sexual harassment material on the agenda tonight.
We can ask Mary during her report. I think she has an explanation for that. But you were really out of line there and you need to know it. Okay, moving on to Larry.
Yeah, I would just like to give a shout out to all of our firefighters and actually all of the firefighters in Contra Costa County. They did one hell of a job over the July 4th weekend, and you guys are all heroes. Something like 120 calls in 7 hours. That's way above and beyond the call of duty. So congratulations to all of you. I hope you got some sleep on July 5th or 6th or something.
Kevin.
I have nothing but to echo Larry's comments. And I was thinking about this even before we were starting, I heard fireworks all over the neighborhood yet again.
Thanks, Kevin. And I think I've made my comments and I'm not going to repeat them. All right, so moving on to the consent calendar, items three, sorry. Moving on to comments from the public on items that are not on the agenda. So we presently have 14 members of the public on the call. If you would like to make a comment on an item that's not on the agenda, please raise your hand. And right now I'm not seeing any hands raised. So I am going to move on to the consent calendar. Items 3.1 through 3.4, approval of minutes from meetings March 11th, June 10th, May 27th, June 3rd. And Mary, were you trying to tell me something about June 26th?
Yes, and Larry actually noted that the May 27th meeting minutes were in there twice. And when I looked, they're in place of the June 26th. So that one's actually not included. So I need to remove that.
Okay. 3.2 is acceptance of the incident activity report. 3.3, approval of the monthly financial report, and 3.4, approval of monthly transmittal. First, let me ask the board, would any member of the board like to remove any item from the consent calendar, consent calendar to discuss it? All right, any member of the public? Thank you. Do we have a motion to adopt the consent calendar, consent items 3.1 through 3.4?
I move we adopt the consent calendar items 3.1 through 3.4 with the notation that the June 26th minutes are missing. So second. We're not approving them.
Second.
Okay, motion Nagel, second Padian. I will poll for the vote. So I'm in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Here. Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
Thank you all. Consent calendar is adopted. And now we move on to item 4.1, which is a public hearing. Fire hazard abatement hearing on the designation of properties containing fire hazards. Michael, I'm going to turn this over to you so that you can orchestrate the folks from the fire department to present this in the way that you think would work the best, if that's okay with you. I just want to note, Mary, you mentioned that an updated list of properties has been, did you send that in email and put it on the website?
Yes, I did. I okay. Sent both, yes.
Okay, So Chief Pagoni, let me turn this over to you to carry out the fire department's portion of the hearing.
Good evening, and thank you, President Stein. Michael Pagoni, the fire chief. As you know, tonight we are coming before you with the public hearing on the weed abatement or the nuisance, the weed abatement program after some extensive inspections that have been done by the fire prevention division and our fire marshal. With us tonight is both Battalion Chief David Gibson, our fire marshal, and Captain Damian Carrion. And so I will go ahead and open this up to Chief Gibson, if he'd like to, if he's got a few words, and then I believe our fire prevention officer will lead off with the actual public hearing part.
Thanks, Chief. Madam President, Dave Gibson, I'm your fire marshal. This year, another intensive look at the community for fire hazards, very diligent work on behalf of Fire Captain Carrion, our fire prevention officer, getting out into the community. As a result of that, and especially our efforts over the last 2 years, is that last year we brought you 299 properties. And this year, with our amended list, we're only bringing you 21. So I think that shows a huge commitment on behalf of the community and embracing what we are trying to get out there and work with them. And as we recognize, it takes all of us working together to make our communities fire safe. And I think that it's certainly a great thing to have our prevention officer Carrion out there doing the hard work that he's doing. And I think all of our efforts are paying off in that way, and we're seeing the results. So with that, I will turn it over to him for his presentation and for this year's hearing.
Thank you, Chief. Good evening, Madam President and board members, members of the community that are on tonight. My name is Damian Carrion. I am your fire prevention officer. This is my second year in this position, and this year we attempted to focus on improving the program. We took information from the community on how to make the program more comprehensive and efficient. We adopted CAL FIRE's model for vegetation management guidelines. We simplified the requirements and included a checklist for property owners to use. We placed articles in the Outlook to prepare the community for the upcoming inspections. We had also planned for a postcard notification prior to May, but we all know what happened in early March. This year, the fire hazard reduction program did not begin until May 18th due to the COVID-19 pandemic. However, we focused on all properties with egregious violations, vacant lots, vacant homes that were either under construction or just appeared to be derelict, and all citizen complaints. We completed our first round of fire hazard reduction inspections on May 27th and found that a total of 76 properties were considered in violation of the vegetation management standards and guidelines. After re-inspections, we completed 55 of those properties had been cleared, while 21 properties remain. Of those 21 properties, four have not attempted to contact our office or have even begun any work on their properties. The other 17 have either contacted our office, notifying us that work has been started or will be completed by the time the second round of inspections goes through. We understand that this has been a trying year for everyone, and we want to work with all the property owners to achieve voluntary compliance. That has always been our goal. I would like to thank the members of the community who completed all the work from last year and worked hard this year to maintain their properties. As the chief alluded to earlier, we had 299 properties last year that were out of compliance. So I would like to emphasize that we are well within fire season. We are already seeing quite a few fires that are locally, and Larry and Kevin touched upon it. The calls for service we've had in Contra Costa County alone on the 4th of July was way beyond normal. So we usually don't see this kind of fire activity till way later in the season. So we're just going to ask that we all work together to make our community more fire safe. With all that being said, We would like to introduce a resolution declaring identified properties in Kensington listed, see the amended list, as public nuisances for the purposes of abatement. Any questions?
No, I move the enactment of resolution 20-09.
Second.
All right, so next on the agenda is to turn to the public because this is a public hearing. And so I will turn to the public to call for comments from those in the audience regarding the fire hazard abatement. And I would like to ask if there's anyone in particular whose own property is affected and you have a specific question, perhaps you could raise your hand first and I'll give that a second. Right now I'm not seeing any hands raised. All right, are there any comments from anyone else? We have 17 folks on the line tonight. Any comments from anyone else on the fire hazard abatement? All right, with that then, being no public testimony, we will close the public hearing. We have a motion on the table to adopt the resolution, a motion that's been seconded. Is there any further board member comment before we vote on the motion? All right, I will call the vote then. I vote in favor, Vice President Padian.
Yes.
Director Domer.
Yes.
Director Kosel.
Aye.
Director Nagel.
Yes.
So the resolution is adopted, and many thanks to the fire department for another really outstanding job. I know that you have been extremely busy with everything that's afflicting us this season. So thank you very much. I know that I've had neighbors call me about specific hazards or near their homes, and you attended to it, and they really appreciated it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Okay. Very good. We are moving on.
Thank you for doing such a nice job.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on now to a set of agenda items that are administrative items. First of all, so we're going to be working with Mary on this. 5.1, are the regional government services invoices for May and June. So Mary, I'll turn this over to you, although I'm sure other board members have plenty to say as well.
Certainly. I included these. I should have included a staff report for a little description, but these are the last two invoices that the district has now received from RGS for May services and for the first few days in June as we completed the transition. So you'll note that the May invoice was for $15,000 and the June invoice, let me just get to it. I included a lot of detail. It was much less, $1,300. RGS, as I mentioned previously, the district has sent the letter, the notification of the payment dispute for the April invoice. I had not received any response. I received a response that they would be addressing the concerns and with a response to us, and I haven't received anything in addition. So I contacted them and they said that they are in progress of preparing their response. They've had a couple of staff out of the area in remote areas, so they are in progress on that. And I contacted legal counsel, and essentially we are waiting for their response on that. And as far as the May and June invoices, I didn't submit them on a transmittal for approval because I think we have additional research that we can do. They have provided time detail by date, which we had wanted. I need to review it in a little bit more detail. So this is really to show you what these invoices are and to let you know the status of the letter that was sent. And that's the point that we're at currently. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, I guess I have a couple comments just to kind of kick it off because I was working really closely with these folks still at least through half of May, if not a little more than half of May. And as far as the May invoice, for me personally, I feel comfortable with the charges from Sasha Amiri, Jolene Miller, Shahzad Pantera, and Linda Wong. I still have very serious questions about the charges from Glenn Lazoff and John Mercurio. Glenn, although he claimed to have brought John Mercurio on board to take over a lot of what he was doing, Mr. Lazoff is still putting in more time, essentially, than any other member of the team. And in particular, Mary, you were on the teleconference that we had to prepare for the May, I think it was the May regular board meeting.
Yes.
When he had supposedly prepared a staff report and forgot to send it and left another report incomplete, and nobody else on the call knew who was supposed to finish it. I mean, there was still a level of disorganization and chaos that, you know, I feel for the rates of, and Mr. Mercurio was on that call and he had nothing to contribute about the incomplete staff report. And he was supposed to be taking over the lead for Mr. Lazoff. So I still have concerns about both of those folks and their effort, but I wouldn't, my personal opinion is I wouldn't feel comfortable paying zero. My experience with Linda Wong and Shahzad Pantera was that they were both conscientious and made valuable contributions. And I found Ms. Amiri to be extremely responsive. And in my opinion, she did the best she could with the situation she was put in. And I'm basically okay with the June invoice myself. But now I'll open it up to other board member comments. I think you can unmute yourselves. Larry, you look like you're ready to say something, maybe.
Well, yeah, I at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I'm in a business where at the end of every month I invoice all of my time, and I'm required to tally my time to the nearest tenth of an hour and explain exactly what I did for that month, and that's how I get paid. I find it unbelievable that this the paperwork that they've submitted, which would require Sherlock Holmes to spend a week going through it to figure out whether it's right or whether it's wrong. And I also, the amount of time that they put in for what I understand they did is just, this just doesn't add up. And it hasn't added up ever since the first invoice of theirs that I've seen. And I really feel that as a board, we have a duty to make sure that these numbers are right. And they don't look right to me. And I think we're, if we just approve this without looking into it, we're being derelict in our duty.
Thank you, Larry. I agree.
Did you have any other comment, Janice? I was going to call on people one at a time, just in the Zoom format, it seems easier, but did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, that's fine.
Don, anything from you?
No.
Kevin?
Well, I agree with Larry, and once again, looking through these things, I'm looking at fairly trivial items like reviewing email and answering email and voice messages, and I'm seeing that John Mercurio is doing a lot of that, and that Sasha is doing a lot of that, and then Mercurio is consulting Glenn, presumably on the emails or something, because we don't know what it is. I do not understand why we are paying someone at the rate of John Mercurio to answer emails when that could be done by an employee making about $30 an hour, even with overhead. I think this is in gross violation of the contract that RGS gave us, saying that they would apply appropriate people to appropriate tasks, I don't think email is that difficult. And a lot of what's going on here, personally, I don't understand the duplication of tasks, why we're paying at such an incredibly high rate. And I still have no idea in the wide world of sports what John Mercurio ever did except to help migrate the website and the email thing. But I also understand that there was some screw-ups there that RGS caused. And why didn't they have someone on the spot to figure this out who could have avoided all those extra charges? I mean, I'm not even in the middle of this, and I can see this from the outside. So I'm really not happy at all about this stuff. I think that we're being charged to have a CEO answer mail, basically. And I just find that's almost fraudulent, because they're just making make-work projects for their highly paid people who don't have anything else to do, so they put them on Kensington and they have them do this kind of work. That is my hypothesis. I'm happy to test it.
Well, I also noticed, maybe my volume's too loud. I also noticed that Mr. Lazoff was preparing the transmittal report, which I seriously do not understand why the finance people, Ms. Pantera and Ms. Wong, wouldn't be preparing the transmittal report. I don't think it's that difficult. It comes straight out of QuickBooks. So, you know, that's an extra, $55 an hour for him to put his time on that. He also charged us to make edits to the desk manual, which we never asked for desk manuals in the first place. So why it fell upon him to make edits to the desk manual, I don't fully understand. I feel a little more generous maybe than everybody else in terms of paying. Like, I'd be willing, I sort of tallied up the charges that I thought I could, you know, they were sort of accountable for, and it came to about $7,609 on the May invoice, which is 49.5%. I mean, for me personally, I'd be willing to pay half the May invoice or 49.5% of it. But I'm not sure that the rest of the board has the same sentiment.
I think that you know best about what you did with them and what they were doing. And increasingly, Mary knows as well. Of course, she can weigh in if she wants to. I would support following you and offering to pay half of that and documenting why we don't want to pay the other half. And as you suggest, paying the June bill, it's small enough. And if they've satisfied what we needed them to do minimally to get out of here, then we're done.
The other reason that I feel that way is because the March invoice was April, extremely substantial, $38,000, and we haven't paid that at all. And I don't think that invoice is wholly unpayable. I do think that there are individuals who were conscientious, and it's the same people that I've actually mentioned. So that's why I'm a little concerned leaving the April invoice completely unpaid without paying something toward the May invoice. And then hopefully we can settle the whole thing in the mix.
Mary, could you tell us if you made any progress with them, or I know you've been working with them, or is there any, what's going on?
So as far as the letter that the district sent disputing the April invoice, that's what you're referring to, correct? Yeah. The letter is in their hands right now. They received it, said that they plan to prepare a response And we haven't received any official response addressing the concerns in the letter yet. I did send a follow-up email and I got a response that they are in progress with responding to that letter, and she will notify me in the next few days where they are with that. And in confirming with legal counsel, they said that's really the point that we're at, so we need to wait for their response at this point in time on that particular invoice.
I guess I'm inclined, since we did not pay the April invoice, I'm inclined to not pay the May invoice as well until we get a response from them. And then we can settle the whole thing in one fell swoop. That's how I would handle it. But I'm also okay with paying half of the invoice.
Would you say, Larry, that paying half of the invoice and telling them, detailing why we don't want to pay the other half would be a way to go, rather than just say we're only paying half of it? Because that way they know. I don't know if that's the best business practice. I'll leave it to others.
That's kind of why I was saying 49.5, or maybe Mary can tally it up, but it really ties to specific people's charges.
Yeah.
Miss Amiri, Miss Miller, Miss Pantera, and Miss Wong.
But haven't paid anything of the April invoice, which was three times as big, right? Or at least twice as big. So
30, I think that one was actually 25, was it not?
Oh, 25. Yeah. Okay, it was March, that was 38.
Yeah. I would prefer to pay nothing until we get a response from them, and then see if we can wind up with a global settlement once we get their response.
All right. Well, I think we all have. Don, do you have any opinion on any
of this? It seems to me if we could settle this one and you pay them 49%, we could be done with it. And it does seem to, for them, they should see that we're willing to try to deal things, bring up things and settle it where we can, where the other thing is a bit large. And so I would do it your way.
So let's see if we've got a motion. And we may have a couple of different motions, but have we got something that we can kind of take to the table and work on?
Well, I would like, if we need to break it up, maybe we could move simply to pay the June invoice as you suggest. That might be the first motion.
Okay. Do I have a second for that?
One point of order. I thought Mary said that these invoices were not on the transmittals. So if we take no action at all, they won't be paid. Is that correct?
That's a good point, Larry. Mary, could you clarify for what kind of action are you actually looking for?
Well,
for
us? The action could be, as you're discussing, to pay part or pay none, or also to submit another letter. I mean, if we're not going to pay them, then I would need to explain why. So it could be partial, what have you, but I would explain why in a letter and work again with legal counsel on that.
But if the outcome was to pay one or part of one or both or what have you, would you just take that vote and then use that as justification to add that payment to the transmittal?
Yes, that will work.
Well, I would like to make a motion that we instruct our acting general manager to send another letter to RGS informing them why we are not paying the May and June invoices until we get resolution on the April, May, and June invoices.
But just hang on, everybody, because Kevin had a motion on the, Kevin made a motion. So let me just see if we, and Larry, you asked for a clarification, but Kevin made a motion that we pay the June invoice, correct, Kevin? So let's work on that motion, then we'll move to yours, Larry.
Okay.
I did
that, and I think if there's no objection to what the June invoice encompasses, it would be bad faith not to pay it. So, and it's small enough, it doesn't hurt us to do it. So that's kind of why I think we should just do it. Get that out of the way, then we'll talk about the rest of them.
So that's your motion. Do I have a second to Kevin's motion?
Second.
All right. Board discussion on Kevin's motion to pay the June invoice. Hearing none, public comment on Director Padian's motion to pay the June invoice in the amount of $1,361.25. Okay, 12 members of the public on the line. I'm not seeing any hands raised. So I'm gonna call the vote on Kevin's motion. I vote in favor. Kevin?
I vote in favor.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
No.
Larry?
No.
Okay, motion carries 3-2 to pay the June invoice. So Mary will be putting that on the transmittal.
Yes.
All right, so Larry, go ahead and, if you don't mind, restate your motion.
Yes, I would like to, for the board to instruct our acting general manager to write another letter to RGS saying that we are not paying the May invoice because of irregularities, and we stating reasons as we did with the April invoice, and that we then wait until we hear from RGS to take further action.
So I just want to ask Mary, is that a motion that you can capture well enough for the minutes? It was a long one.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay, good. One thing I've noticed is sometimes we don't always make our motions the way we want to see them in writing. Okay. But all right, do I have a second for Larry's motion?
I'll second it.
All right, so board member discussion of Larry's motion to write a letter to RGS. Essentially, I'm summarizing, write a letter to RGS, not pay the May invoice. So, Don, do you have any comments on that motion?
I like your idea of paying half of it or 49%.
Okay, thank you. Janice, comments?
Yeah, I'm concerned about possible Brown Act violations when we don't have anything in our packet or on our agenda to pay RGS. I'm concerned about why we think we can do that tonight.
Well, I do think that
they're not on the transmittal.
Well, it is an action item. So let's look at Mary's staff report and see what she put in her staff report about this.
This one I actually did not include a staff report for, but I included the invoices and I included action, which would be potential payment or potential letter of dispute. So
I guess that's what I assumed you were looking for. It could have been more specific, but I don't know if it's a real Brown Act problem because we did say we're taking action.
Correct.
Okay, so aside from your Brown Act concern, Janice, do you have any other comments about Larry's motion?
No, I support Larry's motion.
Okay, how about you, Kevin?
Well, I would rather do what you said, but Larry had a motion, and I think ultimately we can go to your position. I think what you've stated is what we should really come to. And I hope that Mary will say that we are willing to pay, you know, your percentage, but we have problems with the rest. So I vote yes.
Well, wait, I haven't called the vote yet. I was just calling for comments.
I would say, well, that's what I think, but I think it's okay to do it Larry's way.
I have to say that I appreciate Larry's motion, but I'm more with Don in the sense that I think that whatever we can get off the table, we should. And I do think that there were individuals, in my opinion, and because I did work with them, there were individuals at RGS who really put in good faith effort. We knew from the contract that the minimum hourly rate was like $90 or $95 an hour. And the folks who I think really did the lion's share of the work were pretty much at the minimum rate. And I don't personally have any concerns with the effort they put in. I think that it was a bittersweet experience, and some of these people were part of the sweet part of the experience. So I'm gonna go to the public and see if we have any public comment before we vote on Larry's motion. Going once, going twice for hands raised. I don't see any. Hope I haven't missed anybody. All right, I'm gonna call the vote. So for myself, Larry, while I do respect your motion, I'm voting no. Kevin.
I will vote no as well, because I think we should, it's better to be constructive on this one. I mean, I can see it either way.
Don.
No.
Janice.
Yes.
Larry.
Yes.
Okay, motion fails. 2-3. So I guess we're left with, do we have a motion to pay any part of this invoice?
I would move that we pay the 49.1%. Explain why we dispute the rest and invite a response from them.
Do I have a second for Kevin's motion?
Second.
All right, board discussion on Kevin's motion. All right, public comment on Kevin's motion. I see no public comment, so I will call the vote. I vote in favor. Kevin?
I concede either way, but I vote in favor.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
No.
Larry?
No.
Okay. Kevin's motion carries. Mary, do you feel like you have what you need on this?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. 49.1%, correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Thanks, everyone. Moving on to item 5.2, while I'm just trying to track it down in my packet. This is the a new appointment to the Emergency Preparedness Committee. While I'm looking for the application, I'm going to turn it over to our Emergency Preparedness Committee members, Kevin and Larry, to introduce this appointment.
Larry, do you want to start, or should I? What would you like to do?
I can start. This is a nomination for Danielle Madugo. She is has been a regular attendee of Emergency Preparation Committee meetings for 3 or 4 months. The vacancy came up on the committee because another one of our members resigned, and she volunteered to fill the vacancy. I think she's got an incredible resume of talents for emergency preparation. I think she's an excellent choice, and I believe we should wholeheartedly accept her into the Emergency Preparation Committee.
Danielle has a very strong background in geology and seismology. She is able to evaluate a lot of the geological claims that are made about fault lines and seismic. She's a seismologist and an active field geologist. And also, she is one of the parents at Hilltop who is devising the evacuation strategy. And she has already been in contact with Officer Brad Harms about coordinating what they're trying to do internally at the school with what the police department wants to do about getting people out of the school area in case of an emergency. And this, of course, has had a completely changed aspect now that we're going to take down the bollard between the school and the youth hut so that in an emergency people can get through there. It's going to have a great effect, and Danielle's right at the forefront on this as well as other things. We think a lot about fire, but we also think about earthquake, and it's great to have somebody on our committee like everyone else who brings really great skills to the program. So I hope that she can be appointed. That way we'll return to a strength of 9. Even numbers are not as good as odd numbers, just in case of a split decision, which so far we haven't had, but there we are.
And, you know, our policy on this It's not in the red binder yet because we didn't, although we approved the policy last year, I think we never officially updated it, but I've shared it with Mary. It is that the president recommends an appointment to the committee, and then the committee votes on the appointment. And the policy-
You mean the committee or the board, Julie?
Sorry, the board votes on the appointment. The president recommends it. So, and we did write the policy so that appointments could be made anytime during the year. So, you know, based on reading Danielle's application, which I thought was extremely high quality, and on the testimonial from our Emergency Preparedness Committee members, I would like to recommend appointing Danielle Madugo to the Emergency Preparedness Committee. So I think what I'm looking for is a motion to approve this appointment.
I will move that.
I will second it. And I will also point out that Danielle is in the audience if you'd like to have her say a few words.
When I go to public comment, we can do that. So let's see, do we have any board member comments on the motion to approve Danielle Madugo's application to the Emergency Preparedness Committee? Anything from you, Don?
I think she looks great.
Janice?
No.
All righty. So let me turn to public comment. Do we have any public comment on the motion to appoint Danielle Madugo to the Emergency Preparedness Committee? Please raise your hand. And I see one hand raised, Dave Spath. So I'm going to allow you to talk. Dave, you still appear. Okay, you should be ready to go.
Thank you, Julie. Very briefly, I wholly support Danielle's appointment to the committee. She's already played a strong role as just a public observer. And her qualifications are exemplary. So I support her being on the committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. All right, let me, all right. Any other comment, including Danielle, if you'd like to? There she is. All right, Danielle, let me see, give me a second. I think you're unmuted, so please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Danielle Madugo, and I am excited to have to submit my application for the committee. I love living in Kensington, and I'm really aware of some of the hazards that I chose to live next to, and I just and I care about, you know, the community, and especially our interaction with their school. And I just am looking forward to helping out and giving as much knowledge as I have to help out our community and make everything safer as much as possible.
Thank you, Danielle. We don't usually take questions, but does anybody have any questions or comments for Danielle, or should we just move ahead? We're good. Okay, thank you very much. Let's see. And that's the extent of public comment, as far as I can tell. So I'm going to go ahead and call the vote on this appointment. I vote in favor. Kevin?
In favor.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
All right, motion carries 5-0. Danielle, welcome to the committee. We look forward to your continued participation.
Yes, welcome, Danielle.
Yay, thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. Okay, moving on to a couple more administrative items, and we're gonna let Mary handle the next two items, maybe more. 5.3, adoption of resolution 2010, approving amendments to policy 130 pay periods. This is a second reading of this policy amendment. First reading was last month. I hand it over to you, Mary.
Okay. As Julie mentioned, this is the second reading. The amendments to this policy are intended to incorporate some internal controls language and some consistency language that legal counsel provided. I have attached both the clean version of the policy as well as the red line version of the policy to demonstrate what those are. And it's mostly for submittal of timesheets and approval of timesheets and how that process would work. And so this has been through the first reading. So now I have the resolution here tonight for the second reading to approve the amending the policy.
Thanks, Mary.
I'll make the motion that we adopt Resolution 2010, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Kensington Fire Protection District amending policy 130 pay periods.
Second.
All right, Larry, Janice, thank you. Any discussion from any other board members? Don?
No.
Kevin?
No.
And I'm fine with it too. Let's turn to the public. 14 folks on the line. Are there any public comments? I do not see any hands raised. So I will go ahead and call the vote. I vote in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, Mary.
All right.
We have a new policy. Thank you. All right, on to 5.4. This is the first reading, proposed amendment to policy 1150, budget preparation and review. So Mary, I'll let you go ahead and introduce this one.
Okay. This is a first reading of policy 1150 for budget preparation and review. The language in this came to mind when we were developing the budget. There were some areas that could use additional clarity in the policy. This was reviewed with the Finance Committee in May, and some additional adjustments were made following legal counsel review as well. And what the policy amendments are intended to do is to make the policy first more consistent with other policies within the policy manual, and to put some clarification on how the presentation, proposal, review, and amendment will occur. And then there's language in here to allow for flexibility. As I mentioned, the district currently adopts a preliminary budget in June and a final in September. And the language in the fire code, as we've reviewed it and legal counsel reviewed it as well, allows for the district can do it in that manner, but we can actually do it sooner. So there is the possibility of adopting a final budget in June in a particular year when that would work. And so this policy allows it by showing that the policy will be adopted no later than. So it allows flexibility. So it can occur as it has been, or it can be changed if the budget is in a preparation state to be ready for final. And then it also clarifies the budget control. So the budget control, it's at the operational level. And what that means is that the budget in total needs to remain within budget, and that the amounts, if you spend more in office supplies, you just want to make sure that you spend less in another area. So that's what operational level means. It's within the total budget. So this actually puts that statement into writing so that it's clear. And then also lists the administrative procedures. So the last component of the policy is that the general manager will develop administrative procedures that are consistent with the board's policies and devise and maintain systems of budgetary control. So it just kind of puts into writing the fact that we'll provide monthly financial reports, we'll do evaluation and reporting of budget variances, and then do budget amendments for board approval as they're required. And so this is the first reading and the proposed amendments. So then I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Okay, let me just pull the board members one at a time for question and comments, and then we can come back to you if you've thought of more. But Don, do you have anything that you'd like to offer?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. Let's see, Janice.
Nope.
Larry?
I'm very happy to see this cleaned up. It was a little shaky before, and I think this is very good.
Thanks, Larry. Thank you for that comment. Kevin?
I agree with Larry.
Good, and I do too. So let me take it out to the public, and we've got 13 folks on the line. Are there any public comments on this first reading of our new budget policy? Seeing none, this isn't really listed as an action item, but it sounds like we have. How do you want to handle it, Mary?
So the first reading we typically approve, and then it will move on to the second reading if there's no objection then.
So do you want me to actually call a vote?
Yes.
Okay, happy to. So basically a first reading vote to approve the amendment. I vote in favor. Kevin?
In favor.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
Great. So great work on this, Mary. Thank you very much.
Sure.
It looks very good. All righty. So item 5.5, final payment for fire apparatus purchase authorized in September 2018. And there is a staff report on this. And Mary, I'm not sure if it's between you and Chief Pagoni or both of you, I'll turn it over to you.
Great, I'll start it and I'll turn it over. There's a final payment that will be due on the fire apparatus, and the chief can go into more explanation on that. But in September 2018, the board adopted resolution 1808 authorizing purchase of the Type 3 fire apparatus and with a pre-purchase of the cab and chassis from High Tech Emergency Vehicle Services. So there have been some delays, and it's finally expected to be arriving in July or the first week of August. And the final payment will be most likely not to exceed $360,000. So I'm going to turn it over to Michael for more explanation on that.
Thank you, Mary. Yes, good evening. I believe as the email that I sent you, Mary, after last month's meeting, as I explained to you, the completed apparatus when we purchased this or when it was approved, was supposed to, if it had been right onto their delivery time, should have been here earlier this year. A number of things got in the way, COVID-19 being one of them. The other part, and the probably the bigger part that delayed it was last year when a number of tariffs were out there that delayed International from being able to get parts to build the cabin chassis. A number of those things basically, you know, just slowed everything down. The good part is, as Mary said, is it's getting very close to completion. You know, we're looking at the end of this month or very first part of August, and the chassis or the completed apparatus should be here. Our apparatus committee have been over there. They're making about once a week trips over there to check the progress on it in Oakdale. And it's coming along very well. And so the initial purchase on this was a not to exceed amount minus the $220,000 that was the down payment, left the $360,000. We will not be hitting that mark. It'll be somewhat below that. We're waiting for some final pricing on some of the loose equipment, but you know, we're going to be, I'm just guessing probably 10,000-15,000 or better below that amount. We should not be hitting that amount with where we're at right now with the final invoice with it. I mean, we know the chassis itself was a fixed price. That hasn't changed any. What's in flux, because we did not want to buy it until the chassis was here, was the equipment that goes on it. And so, you know, there's obviously that fluctuates due to, again, the same concerns of between the tariffs last year and just the delays in a lot of manufacturers right now that were shut down. But we should be on target to get everything in here with it. And then, so once that is done, well, actually that's another item about the surplusing of the other one. So I won't go into that one yet.
I'll move that we authorize the payment of not to exceed $360,000 as the final payment on our Type 3 engine.
I second.
I just have a question. Is this something that the district pays directly? Like, Mary, is this another payment you'd be putting on the transmittal for this month or for a subsequent month? What's the execution process?
So it will depend on when that invoice comes in. Often with vehicles, it can be that the payment is expected right after receipt of the invoice, and it depends on when that vehicle arrives. So getting the authorization to pay will allow us to, you know, have what we need to put that payment through the county, because those are in capital reserve funds, rather than trying to schedule a board meeting at that point to get a transmittal approved.
So what we'd expect to see if the motion carries is at some point you'll just send a transmittal request to the finance committee, considered it to be approved, and
I would send it with the minutes from this.
Perfect. Don, any comments from you?
No, anxious to see it.
Kevin?
No.
I guess the kid. Yeah, I'm a kid. What's better than a new red fire engine?
All right. Janice or Larry?
Nope.
All righty.
Of course, we're not going to pay for it until it's sitting in our firehouse, right?
Correct.
Okay. Any members of the public?
Hello, Larry. Good call.
We have 12 folks on the line. Please raise your hand if you'd like to make a comment before we vote on this motion. And I'm not seeing any hands raised, so I'll call the vote. I vote in favor. Kevin?
I vote in favor.
Don?
Aye.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
An enthusiastic yes.
All right. Well, that's very exciting. These moments don't come around very often. So, good.
Every 15
every
years.
15 years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay, then item 5.6 is a related item. Sailor surplus of replaced fire apparatus. There is a staff report from Mary. Mary, I'll turn it over to you, and between you and Chief Pagoni, you can also introduce this item.
Yes, thank you. So I have listed sailor surplus of that replaced fire apparatus. Once the new one arrives, then it will be at the point in time where it can be sold or surplus. It depends upon the best method. But I've listed that we would use the most cost-effective option for disposing of that property. And then obviously funds from that sale would be replaced into the capital replacement fund. And I'll let the chief take over from here.
Yes. So what we have done already is we have submitted to a couple of companies that sell, that basically market used apparatus. We have sent them the specs on the old engine, along with pictures, and we are waiting back, in essence, to get an appraisal from them. What they feel it is worth. I mean, we're selling the apparatus as is, no warranty. Although, I mean, it runs fine, and also some loose equipment, some older stuff that basically we do not need. And so once we get that price, we have a kind of like a set price that we feel is a minimum price to accept, then I've had a number of fire departments that have called that are very interested in it, that, you know, we'll put it out for, whether the board wants it to be a formal, bid, or we can do it informal. We're not talking, we're probably talking in the neighborhood of 50-60,000. The sad thing about fire apparatus is used ones don't bring a whole lot of money. even though, you know, it's only 15 years old. But, you know, one of the people that are very interested in it is the San Andreas Fire Department up in the foothills. They are the ones that bought the last engine, the Type 1 engine, and they just love it. And they are, the guy probably calls me about every other week wanting to know if it's ready or not. But there's a number of local California departments that would like to get their hands on it. And so, you know, again, I want a very good, educated opinion as to what the value of it is before we actually talk, you know, to anybody. You know, I mean, you know, I guess it depends on who buys it. It may be worth 20 to somebody. It may be worth 100,000 to somebody else. So, you know, it's to the benefit of the district to put it out there and let someone make offers for it.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to the board. Larry, you look like you're ready to say something.
I would like to make a motion that we authorize the sale or surplus of the our Type 3 engine 365.
All right.
Second.
And I'd like to make a comment before we vote. I hope you'll check with GovDeals, Michael.
Yes.
CSD has a relationship with them, and they've done a good job on selling surplus equipment.
Yes, I have been looking on their website, you know, looking at comparative items for it. And, you know, as I said, the other two people that I'm out there, there's one that's in Nevada and another one that's back in, I believe, Vermont. That sell nationwide, that sell a lot of engines, you know, to get this. But yes, I do have the gov.com website or the information on it.
Thanks.
And I want to clarify that we're not going to sell, or I should say we're not going to release this engine until the other one's actually in service. So, you know, especially since we're going into fire service or fire season.
In the meantime, you can park in front of Larry's house and he can drive it around whenever he wants.
I was going to ask if he said to Vermont, can I be on the team that drives it back there?
That's always a possibility.
Mary, I think that both Don and Janice seconded the motion simultaneously. Do you need clarity on that?
I think so. I heard both.
Are you going to pick one?
I think I heard Janice first.
I think I did too.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Okay, good. Any other board member comments? All right, let's take it out to the public. We have 11 people on the line still. Any public comments before we vote on this motion to authorize the sale or surplus of the replaced fire apparatus? I do not see any hand raised, so I will call the vote. I vote in favor. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
All right. Well, good luck with the sale, and somebody's going to be very happy. So, all right. It's starting to get dark in my room here. I'm going to have to turn on some lights. So, the next item, 5.7, public safety building renovation. County evaluation estimated cost. So Mary has provided us with a staff report and some supplemental information to the extra services request 7 that RDC submitted to us. So Mary, I'm going to let you go ahead and present this to us.
Okay. As we recall, back in June, the interim general manager was authorized to seek county evaluation of the public safety building renovation option B with Ross Julius Cullen Cousinberry Architecture in conjunction with the Police Protection Community Services District. On June 10th, the board authorized me to devise a cost-sharing arrangement with the Police Protection District for the potential renovation and to report back to the board. And we established the extra service request 007 that would authorize, first, we did that back in May, for RDC to facilitate the board workshop and then to proceed on with the board's direction on what activities to pursue, which is the county evaluation of the seismic elevator and potential with the balcony. Now, RDC has provided the cost estimate to go along with that extra service request for the specific county evaluation aspect of it. The total cost is estimated to be $27,426. And as I mentioned, I was right in there. He thought it would be 20 to 30. So it's coming in just below his estimate. And this will be shared 50-50 with the Fire Protection District and the Police Protection District. I have more to report in my report later for a public safety building update, but they're working currently with the Police Protection District to get that agreement in place. That is actually on their agenda for tomorrow night. And their RDC is working to set up the county meetings. So I'm looking for approval of the estimated cost. If it appears that the effort will go over the estimate, they will provide an update. And I'll answer any questions.
I just wanted to say that, go ahead, John.
Go ahead, I can wait.
Mine is really simple. You know, I've reviewed their agenda packet for tomorrow, and they do indicate that we'll be splitting the cost 50-50. It's kind of interesting that Mallory gave a slightly different estimate to them, probably not substantially different, but they say in the general manager's report that the cost will be approximately $12,500 for each agency. So that's off by about $2,700 from Mallory's estimate for us. So it's close. And he gave them no detail whatsoever, but he gave us a lot of detail. So I guess that's what's important to us. And they still do not have the... They have not shared the floor plans with their board. It's not in their agenda packet. So their board does not know what floor plans are even being considered. So I do hope that they're going to feel that they have enough information to actually vote on this. I'd be surprised if our board voted to spend $12,500 without even seeing what we were voting on. So that's a mystery to me. But those are my comments. Don?
I'm surprised at the amount. I mean, this is something I've done before on my practice, and it just seems as if that's an awful lot. It's 100 hours of architectural time, and it just seems like that's pretty heavy, because going in to meet with the building department is a pretty cut and dried, no joking around. You know, you got the code book, you go through it, and everybody's decided, you go on to the next one. So it's pretty cut and dried. So I'm surprised they have something like 6 meetings. I might be off on that. So it's hourly, so I'm going to vote for it, but it seems pretty stiff to me.
Don, do you feel like this is a not to exceed worst case scenario?
They'll go in and they'll make a presentation with the structural engineer. That's a different individual that does the plan check. And so, I don't know if you want to know this, but it's a sort of a packaged engineering program that's used in the industry. I mean, it's not the only one, but so the county will accept that. So a lot of the sort of setup and details are there to follow and discuss. The rest of it, we have to go through with the elevator,
and the second floor ADA kind of issues. So that again is, they have to decide what the what they do with the elevator. Do we have to do it or not? But I don't think they're going to spend 10 hours on that. It's going to be pretty cut and dried again. So it just seems like it's a little fat.
So you're thinking that this is a plan not to exceed budget, and yes, we may be able to get away with a lot less depending on what complications
I
they
think
throw
so.
At us.
Yeah. And,
okay.
And,
okay. So it may not be this much.
No. I mean, especially if they get in and have a couple plan checkers sit there and they go through things and decide, but it doesn't, you don't usually go back again and again and again at this early stage.
So Donnie, he's got $4,198 for reports and board meetings with our two agencies.
I don't know why we would need that at all.
Yeah, it's like the last two cost items.
Yeah, John, I saw that, and I don't see that we need that. I mean, we're going to get some sort of a report, and we may want to talk to him, but I don't see that if they want to come in and tell a story about going to the county, it's fine, but it doesn't seem like we need to spend that money there.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion that we authorize the payment of not to exceed $28,000 to be shared equally between our district and the Community Services District for architectural fees in the county evaluation of the public safety building renovation.
I'll second that.
All right. Larry, did you have any comments on this motion or the issue in general?
I was going to second it, but Don beat me to it.
Okay, great. All right. Let's turn to the public and see if anybody from the public has a comment on this motion that Janice has made that Don has seconded. I see one hand raised. Paul and Vita Doro, I've just allowed you to talk. Go ahead, please.
Can you hear us now, Julie?
Yes.
Thank you. Just a quick thank you to this board for taking the leadership on moving this project forward in such a transparent way on behalf of the whole community. I know it's not been easy. There have been a lot of bumps in the road, but those of us who are following along with this appreciate it very much, and hope that you will continue the good work and get this over the finish line.
Despite the other boards.
Thank you, Paul and Vita, for your comment. Much appreciated. And I will mute you. And any other comments from the public? All right, I am not seeing any. We have 11 folks on the line. So I will go ahead and call the vote unless there's any further board member comment. So I vote in favor of Janice's motion. Kevin?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
Janice?
Aye.
Larry?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries 5-0. Thank you all very much. Now we're moving to item 5.8. Even though my name is on this letter, I did not write the letter. This is a proposed letter to the Contra Costa County Fire Chief regarding cameras on Volmer Peak. And it's my understanding that this letter has come out of the Emergency Preparedness Committee. So I will let the committee members, Kevin and Larry, introduce this letter to the board.
Thank you. Larry had to miss that meeting, but I will just say that we have a group of a very experienced and enthusiastic people living up on the ridge there around Purdue and Lake Drive. Some of them are listening and participating tonight. And the idea was to make sure that our our county fire chief understood that there were volunteers who were ready, willing, and able to help to monitor the Vollmer Peak cameras and to emphasize their desire that at least one camera be trained entirely on the Wildcat Canyon in event of a fire. These technological things obviously are the purview of the fire department, and we know that our chief and other people in the county and the OAS can monitor this and change the angle. And so all our citizens are saying is we really are concerned about having our local canyon monitored, and we'll be happy to help as another pair of eyes. And that's really the gist of it. And I would really like it if Chief Bogoni could comment on the value of this and the practicality of it as well. This is just about volunteers.
Sure. You know, as you've stated, there are the two cameras up there right now. There's actually a number of people that do have control of these cameras, myself being one of them.
Yep.
And, you know, so barring anybody messing or anybody adjusting the camera that has the permission to do that, the normal position for these cameras is to face into the wind, which obviously when we're worried about Wildcat Canyon is going to be the Diablo winds, which for the, you know, pretty much would be looking up, is going to give you a good view of looking up into Wildcat Canyon. So by nature, the whole thinking there is that it, looking into the wind, if there is a fire, that's where the smoke is going to be coming from with it. The nice thing about it is besides those two cameras, this county, not all that look into Wildcat Canyon, but this county now is up to 12 cameras that are looking around, you know, where just not even a year ago, there was only two cameras in this county. So, the group is doing a great job at it. I think the letter is a great letter to send. But understand that while they can, you know, try to put a priority to that, the fact that there are other people, there may be somebody, like somebody from Moraga may want to look at something back towards, you know, Briones or somewhere else. And, you know, they will have the ability to move the camera if there's nothing active going in the other location for it. But again, it's a great tool. Sending the letter, you know, asking for the support, I think is a good move.
Do you see much of a difference between the pointing in the wind direction and pointing down the canyon? Because obviously where a fire starts is going to in part determine, what we're talking about. So, I mean, the concern here with the residents, just they want to make sure that what's going to crawl up their back alley is monitored, and they just will do anything to help. That's really the expression of what people are trying to say.
Yeah, I believe, I mean, especially the fact that there are two there. There's one on the tower and then one on the repeater site. I mean, they're basically right on top of each other. They tend to point between the two of them. They tend to usually cover that area, you know, to where you can see it. The other one, while you won't be able to pinpoint, but it gives a better view of the whole hillside or the whole ridgeline, is there is a camera on Nickel Knob, which is obviously in Point Richmond, which is a distance away, but it normally is pointed at the hills. You're basically overlooking Richmond Heights, El Cerrito, and Kensington. And so it is yet another view that will give, you know, if smoke starts coming above it, will give, not only volunteers looking, but also Confire dispatch, you know, if they get a report of something, they will be able to swing the cameras around and take a look, you know, and see what's going on in there. Right.
Do you know if is there a plan to install any more cameras in the area?
PG&E right now, and I do not have a timeline on it, PG&E is looking at a camera
that will go with their weather station that they have the top of Mosier on one of the big towers that will look down into the canyon, which again will be another great vantage point. But we have a group with the executive chiefs in this county that are working with PG&E and with the Alert Wildfire, at picking out advantageous spots to install more cameras. You know, like I said, we've done 10 in the last year, with many more planned. It's just a matter of, you know, the time to get them in there, you know, find the places that have the minimum service that they need for power and Wi-Fi, and, you know, and getting them installed.
Yeah, good. So thank you for the support. I know Larry wasn't at the meeting, but you should weigh in if you got anything, Larry.
I did read the letter, and I agree wholeheartedly with it. One minor comment for Mary. Please spell Elizabeth Eckel's name right. There's no I in Elizabeth Eckel. It's just Echols.
Well, this happens a lot. Sorry. She gets her name misspelled a lot. We'll fix that. So thank you. Julie, if you decided you're okay with this, I would be happy to work with you to draft language that would be, you know, helpful to you to transmit it if it helps.
Well, I actually have a number of questions about the letter myself. So if we're ready to kind of turn it over to general board member comment, I can go first or I can let someone else go first.
No, please go.
All right. Well, I mean, as far as the actual letter itself, I would prefer to strike the sentence that says a particular concern would be a fire started by an arsonist in Wildcat Canyon late at night. I mean, if I'm signing this letter, I personally don't see the need for that sentence, not to give anyone any ideas. Secondly, really more of a conceptual point, the sentence that says, if this is done, the KFPD is willing to organize a neighborhood watch to help monitor the canyon during these high risk events. So who exactly is that? Mary's organizing a neighborhood watch, or how exactly is that going to work? Because board has discussed organizing a neighborhood watch.
We would do it through the Emergency Preparedness Committee. We have several members who live right up there on the ridge, and they're very involved in this and very concerned. And also the neighborhood, as Larry knows, because we've been up there with meetings with them, is incredibly well organized. They're probably the best organized in town.
I guess from my perspective, I'd like to get other board members' opinions on that, because my personal opinion is that it needs to be a board decision if the district is going to organize a neighborhood watch versus just the neighborhoods themselves or CERT organizing a neighborhood watch. So I am throwing that out there for discussion. And I was curious, your last sentence, we look forward to working with you on how to best set up such a program here. I think you're referring to the neighborhood watch. And so one of these folks is in Nevada, and then the other is Contra Costa County and Concord. Would they really be the ones that we would work with on a neighborhood watch?
Okay, thank you. The person in Nevada, I'm sorry, Nevada.
Nevada, Reno.
Big difference. they are the people who manufacture the cameras. And of course, it's set up through, as Chief says, through PG&E and other places that own the towers. So this part of the letter, and I think what we're realizing is that we don't really have to send this letter to the people in Nevada because they only make the cameras. The important thing is that our local officials recognize the willingness of people to help. I think it's perfectly fine if it's a neighborhood thing that's not particularly organized by the fire board. It may be that our Chief Richard, who we saw on TV so beleaguered over the weekend with these fireworks stuff, that he just know that they're responsible people and we want to work with the system. that's really the spirit and intent. But really, if local neighbors can do it without anything official, that's also fine. Everyone just wants to get this done and help however they can. But it's fine to take out any language that, you know, doesn't seem or seems overly committed or non-committal and just transmit the sentiment.
Yeah, I think the intent here is to have the Emergency Preparedness Committee involved in this rather than the board. So I certainly wouldn't mind changing the letter to say, if this is done, the Emergency Preparedness Committee of the KFPD is willing to organize a neighborhood watch. That's, I think, what we're saying, is it not, Kevin?
Yeah, I would move to adopt the letter sent over Julie's signature with any modifications that she feels are necessary, only get the point across.
These are all good points. I was also wondering why the fire chief would not fight, you know, the fire department as opposed to the board would, you know, which is the better entity to send this letter? I mean, had you thought about, or I mean, maybe it's a question to Michael. Do you think it's more appropriate that the board send the letter versus the, you know, coming from you as the fire chief?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I haven't really thought about it one way or the other as to what's more effective. You know, I would say that, you know, being it's the Emergency Preparedness Committee that, you know, is basically driving this, which is, you know, a good thing. You know, it probably should come, that's part of the district and not part of the district itself. But I mean, you know, with a few of the changes as what you have mentioned already on some of the language, I mean, I don't have a problem with sending it.
So you'd sign on to it, you're saying?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, why, you know, why is there a choice?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Well, maybe open it up for other board member comments. Don, do you have any comments?
No, I'm okay.
Janice?
I guess my question and concern is who has the ability to change the focus of the cameras? My preference would be for fire department personnel rather than Emergency Preparedness Committee personnel to have that power.
So the fact is that the
emergency people will not
can't do it.
They limit who has control of those cameras. It's just a couple of people per agency. They will not release it to civilians.
And they don't want it to be.
Yeah.
They don't want it to be. They just want to help.
All right, did we have a motion then for the letter? Is everyone on the board okay basically with the letter coming from the district or maybe co-sign it with the fire chief?
That would be nice.
All right. Before we go to public comment, so do we have a motion on this from someone on the board? Then the public will know what they're commenting on.
Yes, I'd like to make the motion that we approve the transmittal of this letter to the Contra Costa County Fire Chief with the signature of our board president and our fire chief.
Okay, thank you, Larry.
I will second. Larry, will you accept the friendly modification that that the signatories can modify the letter as they see fit based on our discussion?
Absolutely, I trust them.
Me too.
Okay, thank you. Any further board discussion? All right, any comments from the public on the motion that was made? Yes, Mabry, I'm calling on you. You should be unmuted. Let's see. Now,
okay. Now you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. To authorize a letter as they see fit to me is just a blank check. I think it would be more appropriate to have some more specific either suggestion language or broadly suggestions, since it sounds like it, Julie's points, I think, were right. It is really not quite an appropriate letter, and I don't like to see this blank check given like that, even though I'm not being distrustful, but, you know, okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Any other? Yeah, let's see, Dave Spath, I am, let me see, just one second here.
You might want to mute Mabry.
I think we will. Okay, yeah, sometimes these controls get a little
confusing. I know, right?
Okay, Dave, I'm trying to unmute you. Yeah. Okay, I think you should be able to talk now, Dave Spath.
Actually, there's a quick question to the chief. You mentioned that you have control over the cameras in some respect?
That is correct.
And how does that relate to the control we're asking, how does that relate to what we're asking the Contra Costa fire chief, the county fire chief, on that control measure? I mean, does he override you?
No. Basically, I mean, by going to the county, county dispatch, what we refer to as CONFIRE, the county fire dispatch, they are monitoring, well, I should say they're monitoring, they have control to monitor. They do not have people sitting there looking at them all the time. But they are the ones that basically set up, you know, based on weather, that set up the directions of it. I mean, most people are not going to move it unless they're looking for a fire. You know, I mean, it's not a deal where everyone's just using it to go sightsee. They're normally, like I said, they're normally pointed into the wind, and unless there's a need to move them around for it. But people from every, you know, basically all the fire chiefs, you know, if something's happening in their area, you know, we've got the ability to log in and swing the camera around and zoom in, zoom out.
And I guess it just, the letter seems odd to have you sign it when you have the control over it as well.
Oh, Dave, if I may, this is not about asking the residents to have control. It's just about asking the cameras to be trained continually, one of the cameras to be trained continually on the area that most threatens their homes. And just an offer for volunteers to participate in any way possible.
Now, I know that I was talking about the control that the chief has over moving the camera. That was my point or my question.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
I was just wondering, since he's signing the letter, but also has the ability to control it, it just seems odd. That's all.
Yeah, it would just be the fact, you know, I'm not looking at it every day. You know, in dispatch, while they're not looking at it continuously, it is up on a monitor there. And, you know, if it's something that they're willing to do to, you know, make sure that if somebody moves it, they can move it back.
Yes.
You know, when you're looking at it, if someone's moving it, the person's name will come up on the camera.
Right. I mean, we're talking about a permanent fixture on this going into the canyon.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any other comments from the public? Okay, then I think we are ready to vote on Larry's motion. Which was seconded by Kevin. I vote in favor, Kevin.
Yes.
Don?
Don's absent.
I lost Don for a second. All right, I'll go to Janice.
Dave and Mabry have persuaded me, and I will now vote no.
Okay. Larry?
Yes.
So that's three yeses, and with Don not present, I think that procedurally, we can go ahead with a 3-1 and one absent. Are you okay with that, Mary?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I did want to say that I thought that the motion did say that any edits that were made to the letter would be within the context of the discussion we had here at the meeting.
That is correct.
And that it wasn't going to be somebody would come up with some great brand new idea that the board hadn't discussed.
And yes, we're all on the same page, I believe, too.
Okay. All righty. So our next item is a presentation by Zone Haven on a proposed evacuation tool subscription service. And we have Mr. Charlie Crocker from Zone Haven who has joined us. Don, we went ahead and voted on the last item. I didn't see you step away.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was going to sneak away for a minute.
It was three. We had three votes in favor, one opposed. So okay. It was going to pass regardless of how you voted. So we went ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. So this is a bit of a tricky item. I'd like to just have a little bit of board discussion before we launch into it. So there is a presentation that was actually published in the board packet that doesn't really, in my opinion, get to the heart of the action item. And the action item is to ask the board to vote on a subscription service. So I think it was yesterday, the board members received something closer to a contract or an actual, not quite a proposal, more of a contract with two exhibits. And this was posted on the website yesterday. And so this actually gets to the heart of the cost of this subscription and the components of it. So I'd like to just get some comments from board members about, would you like to see the full presentation about the evacuation alert process that includes some background on Diablo Winds and some of the things that we've seen before? Or would you like to just go straight to discussing this, the actual subscription that was sent to us by email? Because I don't know if folks got a chance to review that, but I'm gonna open that up for a quick discussion.
Could I just say, first of all, Charlie, thank you so much for coming, and thank you for your efforts on our behalf. Did you get the second pack of traffic data I sent you this morning?
Yes, we did. Yes.
Okay, I'm sure that's way more than anybody. You got lots of things on your plate, but at least now you have everything, I think, in terms of the data that our traffic evacuation people put in, the road measurements and all the intersection points and everything else. I'm sorry, there's an echo through somebody. I'm not sure whose phone it is. Anyway, so we have had, I think at some point it would be really good to look especially at your slides 8-13 as a beginning to understanding how the system works. We've had two presentations before that encompass the rest of your slides, so we can save your time on that one. And as Julie points out, thank you for the contract. It was very good to see everything like that. My suspicion is that we would need to have our legal people look at it before we actually make any kind of a decision. And so maybe it would be better if we did some work on that front and then came back to you with some questions about the model after people have had the chance to review it. That's just my view. And I think it would be just a better use of your time.
Yeah, I was, I was not really expecting to give a full-blown presentation tonight. I know it's late. It would be something that I'm happy to share with folks if we need to. I think it was Larry and you, Kevin, attended a webinar that we had last week. So yeah. I know that a couple of you've had an opportunity to see the details of the whole application. So I'm really here to help answer any questions around what the subscription is, what the pricing might be. You guys are people we've worked with from the beginning of this project, and so we've been very happy to let this thing run for the last 6 months. And there's a lot of work that we've been continuing to put in. So we're just hoping to continue to be able to work with you, and we put a big discount in there, and we're hoping that we're able to make that happen. It's really a 3-year subscription. So really we're only looking for 1/3 of that total cost in this year. And then in addition, we are working with the county. Chief Pigione is aware of that as well. And there is a chance that the county may fund the whole project countywide sometime later in the year or early next year. And if that was to happen, then this contract could be terminated and your expenses would be covered through the countywide contract.
Well, that would be totally cool.
Julie, there's somebody who's not muted who's making a lot of noise.
I think can that might be me. I'm gonna try muting. I'm having an issue with mine, so let me try that.
It might actually be coming through Charlie's system, but I don't know. It's okay though.
Well, he has headphones on, so he's probably not causing the problem, but it's stopped. So I think it's gotten better. So it just happens sometimes. So let me just, so the question I was first asking, because I just want to kind of be proper with respect to process, does anybody mind if we just go straight to questions as opposed to asking Mr. Crocker to go through the presentation that's in our packet?
No, I would propose that we could enact a motion today, if subject to approval of our attorney, to approve and authorize the contract with Zone Haven.
I would oppose that because we have a lot of substantial questions. Not that these are objections, but we need to find out a lot more logistically about what's going on, how this interfaces with the data our traffic evacuation people have done, which has now been turned over to Charlie for whatever use they can make of it, which I think would be great.
I can answer it. I can answer that.
Everybody slow down for a sec. It's fine that Janice has made that motion. We don't know how everyone's going to vote on it, but if she gets a second to her motion, then we all get to discuss and have input, and we can vote the way we will. And during that discussion, we'll ask our questions. Larry, are you seconding Janice's
motion? I second the motion.
Okay. All right. And just to be clear, because I'm not sure if all the members of the public or even all the members of the board have seen this contract that came out, the subscription, as I understand it, for Kensington is $7,000 a year for 3 years. So we would be voting on a $21,000 commitment, as I understand it. Is that how you understand it, Charlie?
By signing up for 3 years, you get the discount, but you're only paying $7,000 each year. And then if the county does cover the whole thing based on a different contract, then this contract would terminate and you wouldn't be on the hook for any of the following years.
I mean, I just have a few questions and I'll probably have many more, but you know, when we were approached by the fire department on June 8th, they said that our part of the subscription would be $1,667,000 a year. So that's quite a substantial difference between $7,000 a year and $1,667,000 a year. So I'm not sure if you happen to know what is the nature of that.
I'm not sure what that, if you want to share the document with me, I'm happy to look at it and let you know what, you know, how that was calculated.
Oh, I can tell you. On June 8th, our battalion chief, Joe Grupal, wrote to me and Larry as members of the Emergency Preparedness Committee and asked us to authorize another $5,000, which almost all of it was in the still in the budget, to purchase this subscription, which he said would be $5,000 for 3 years in his email. And then 2 days later, he wrote a memo to Mary, which I think she had, which I have, that now said that it was $5,000 for 1 year, in as much as we had no paperwork from Zonehaven, we were not able to do anything about that, Charlie. I'm sure you understand.
Yeah. So, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So we just, so it was like, but I think our surprise was that we didn't know there was going to be software associated with a package. And you know what? Maybe when you did the Polygon model at first, you didn't either, you know, but now this all is layered on top. And I agree that Larry and I went to the webinar and it was very informative. And now you've given us the link for it and the password. And I would suggest that if you would feel okay about sharing it with all the board members, so that the board members could have a chance to look at this and see how the system works. Actually, anybody in the public can, if you feel like you would like to do that, then we could have the time to educate ourselves about exactly what this is all about. It was very well done by John Cox, who was such an amazing presence in the North Bay fires. And the other guy I didn't know, Matt, but anyway, you know, but you know, they explain things very well. And I think that if our board members and maybe people in the public had a chance to look at this whole thing and have those guys explain it the way they did in the webinar, we'd be able to come back a little better educated.
Yeah, I'm happy to. The password doesn't change, so you can feel free to into your board notes the link, or if you want to give me people's emails, I'm more than happy to send the link directly to them as well.
Well, we could put it on the district website, and people, anyone in town, could take a look at it.
That's fine.
If that's okay with you. I don't want to preempt anything that.
We don't have anything to hide here. We think it's a good system. We've got the support of so many fire and police agencies across the Bay Area. We're happy to share it.
Good. Larry, what do you think?
I think that's a great idea. I actually did log onto the website and did a practice a practice run. Now, I don't think we want the public to just log on to this and...
No.
Not that part, Larry, just the webinar.
Thank you, please. Yeah, no, we're providing link to the webinar that will show Jonathan Cox and Matthew Sampson talking Matt about Sampson,
yes.
Yeah,
okay, talking about. I understand. I can also log on and actually order an evacuation, I think, or when it goes live, I'll be able to.
Yes, if you have the right privileges, you will be able to. At this point, I'm sure you do not have those privileges.
Yeah.
However, Chief Pagoni does.
Yes.
So I have two questions, and they're very different questions, and you could answer them in whichever order you prefer. My first question is just more to the functionality of what we are purchasing, and how will our lives look different in a wildfire or a fire caused by an earthquake? How will our lives look different if we have your subscription versus if we don't have your subscription?
It's a great question. The basis of the application are the zones that have been created for most of Contra Costa County, or the western portion of Contra Costa County. We're also going to be releasing zones fairly soon for Berkeley and Oakland as well. So we'll be able to have contiguous zones throughout that region. Within the application, you're able to build and maintain very detailed evacuation plans for each of the zones. One of the things we've been looking at, Kevin, with your data, is that information could be put into the actual evacuation plans themselves, and you'd have richer plans in Kensington than we would in other places where they haven't done that detailed analysis, for example. That same data is made available, portions of it, to the public as well. So the public has access to the same set of zones, and they have information to routes, and they have information about some of the places where they may be told to go. And so there's a relationship between working in the operational app and sending information to the public. In addition, so that's what we call the prepare piece. Prepare for your and plan for an evacuation. This Jonathan Cox brought this up regarding the Kincaid fire. They had 40 hours to plan for an evacuation of 180,000 people. It took all 40 hours. They had to be in a tent. They needed to figure out where the populations were. They had to figure out what the routes were, where they're going to put police, fire, etc. We're proposing that you do that before the actual fire happens so that we can move people more quickly. The second piece is training. So we have a portion of the application that allows you to run fire models, to run perimeter models, to look at bomb threats, earthquake, etc., a variety, what we call multi-hazard. And so with that, you can generate actual recommendations for how you would get people out of harm's way. First, we need to evacuate the people closest to Wildcat Canyon. Then we need to evacuate the people that are just down the hill. The fire's coming from the north, so we want them all to head south. And then finally, there's an alerting piece. So you're able to actually instigate an alert and say, we're shutting down this zone. And when that zone gets shut down, the public gets alerted through a variety of different methods. It gets sent to the county warning system, and it gets sent to applications like Waze, and they will redirect traffic away from the hazard that we're discussing. So the entire application is prepare, train, and then actual execute. Right now, we've created the zones for you. And if you want the zones, you can have them. They're geographic map features. The application is what brings those zones to life and allows you to work with the your adjacent agencies, so with El Cerrito, with Moraga Arinda, with Confire, with Berkeley, and to do the type of regional and local planning that you need to be ready.
Yeah, so this is great. I want to ask the question that I hope the answer is no, but you haven't ever actuated this in a real emergency, right? It's been tabletop exercises and simulations so far.
So this is the first season where we've had the full application up and running. So last season, Moraga Arinda used it for communication. They were using the zones to communicate, but they didn't run the alert. We're not releasing the actual live alerting capabilities for another 6 weeks. It's really right now focused on pre-planning, right? Without the pre-plans, a lot of that downstream stuff doesn't make sense.
Yeah, we're getting deep in the weeds, and at some point I think we have to have a non-contractual related conversation about the topography and the behavior of what happens in Kensington, which is a very difficult community because there are so many cars, so many people, such terrible parking and such narrow roads. And so another thing that we're now doing is working on changing some of the parking and traffic configurations. And once we get that and we get a sense of what our evacuation routes, you know, if they have to be improved or changed somehow, working between police and fire to do this in Kensington, it may affect or it may not what happens with the polygons and how those may be actuated. But the great thing is the model is flexible, so it can always be altered as necessary. So this is a work in progress.
Yeah, so the thing that we feel like, go ahead, Julie, you want me to?
No, go ahead and answer Kevin, and then I have another two more.
Okay. the polygons and the pre-plans, the way we like to say it is that they're dynamic, right? A lot of places we've gone to end up getting an evacuation plan or an evacuation model done by a consultant. It gets delivered, and trying to provide is a place where that three-ring binder becomes dynamic. So as you learn new things about your community, as you make changes to your community, it's easy to update your plans and to communicate those both within your community and to the adjacent communities and any communities that come in to support you during a mutual aid event.
Give me just 1 second. Mary got disconnected, so I'm putting her back onto the panel. Huh. How come I can't get her on the panel?
She looks like she is.
Oh, now she's back. Okay. Or I'm not sure. So I was just wondering, what kind of peer review or independent certification have you had for your software as far as accuracy, reliability, resilience? Is it just kind of a homegrown program that people are buying, or have you published about it, or do you have investors who've, you know, tested it and they feel like it's solid enough for them to invest in your company?
So a couple things. One, we do have investors. So a very, very large tech company was the first company to invest in us. So we have both their backing and we have their technical support. They're a $5 billion a year revenue giant database company, kind of like Oracle. And they're based in the Bay Area here. So we have them, and we feel like that technical relationship with them really helps to shore that up. Number two, we're building the entire platform right now on Amazon Web Services, which is a very robust SaaS-oriented platform. And we have very senior developers and managers in the company. And then number two, we recently signed a 3-year contract with all of San Mateo County. And through that, we've had to do an IT audit. And we've worked with their IT team to go through and figure out what level they need, what type of security, what are the different types of logins, what's our uptime, when are we allowed to take the application down, all those kind of things. So we know that this is a public safety app. We know that we're working with government agencies that are on 24/7. And so we're building it that way from the start.
Thanks for that answer. That gives me a lot of reassurance. Because I was looking at, I do understand force majeure clauses, but I was looking at your force majeure clause and I noticed that it said, neither party shall be liable for any failure or delay in performance under this agreement due to fire. And that's why we want you.
Right. It's interesting. So one of the places where we worry about indemnity, and that's in that as well, is, you know, we are not ultimately responsible for the decisions that Law and Fire make using the platform, right? It's a tool that we've given them, and so, you know, those are the conversations that we have. So yeah.
And then finally, what I wondered is a difference between, like, I don't know if El Cerrito is subscribing to this, and they have a different size population than Kensington has, and would we be better if we were part of a joint El Cerrito-Kensington subscription? And then we paid our proportional share. It looks like your fees are based on population. And maybe that's more of a question for Chief Pagoni. I'm not sure.
Well, I think Charlie can answer that probably better than I can, because as you said, it is based on a population. And I know Joe had talked with you, Charlie, about that. And I wish I could remember now what it was he had told me. Was the total price based on our combined population and we just broke it out between the two, or?
So right now we have two separate proposals out. One is for Kensington and one is for El Cerrito. And I'm happy to combine the two if you, Chief Pagioni, it's something that you guys are interested in, and then we would just combine the totals. And I think the tier that you guys are in right now is 20,000 or under, and the next tier would be 40,000 or under, and the two of you together would be 40,000 or under. And so then you guys would have to decide how you would want to split that up. Is it by air, you know? So I don't want to get in the middle of you guys figuring out how that gets funded, but I'm happy to write a proposal that is where you guys are working together or where you're working separate.
Yeah, thank you. This occurred to me because the population of El Cerrito is about 26,000. So they're already in the second tier for you. Kensington is about 5,000. That puts us in the first tier. But if Kensington is added to El Cerrito, they're still in the second tier. And, you know, since this project was begun and presented to us as a Kensington project, and El Cerrito was never mentioned, but it turned out that the polygons were mapped also for El Cerrito, which is fine with me. Although I think maybe Janice would object, that could be a gift of public funds to another agency because it was not mentioned. But I think that if Charlie says to our chief, you know, you guys have been so great, we're just going to do this for free, then that's not a problem. But I think that in future, if we could continue to regard this, because all your zones are labeled ECK, of the 17 zones you have, Kensington operates or occupies three of them and parts of two others, which is about a sixth to a fifth of area and population. You know, it would be great to continue to do this together because we have the same fire department.
I don't see a problem with looking at that, you know, as far as I can have Joe work with Charlie and we can come up with a, you know, see what the price is and see if there's a savings to be had there. You know, the ultimate thing, as Charlie talked about earlier, is, you know, obviously this is a three-year commitment we're doing for the discount. You know, as he said, there is a very good possibility that the county basically, Moraga Rinda on as a host agency applied for a UWASI grant that was taken, that was to basically allow this whole service to go countywide. The grant has been approved, not only from the Contra Costa County level, but also from the UWASI is between Contra Costa and Alameda County. It's been approved by the bigger group. What's being weighed, the wait period right now is for the actual funds to become available. It's in essence through the Homeland Security grants. Those typically come anywhere between November and January, just depending on, you know, how fast the government's working. But it has been approved, and I believe Moraga Rinda has actually got the notification from the county OES that that the project is approved, but obviously we don't spend any money until the money's physically there on the deal. So, but anyway, but I can have, you know, as far as whatever the total price, I can have Joe get with Charlie and we can look at a joint price, and then we would just have to basically amend the fee schedule, you know, to bring that in if it gives us both a discount.
Yeah, so with respect, that seems like a discussion that El Cerrito and Kensington have to have first, and that sounds great. Charlie, this is very clarifying. Do you so you are still signing up people? I mean, I don't mean people, districts, to develop polygons for them. Yes.
Yeah, you will see by December probably somewhere around 8 to 10 additional counties in the Bay Area.
Wow. So when you start to do this, do you have like a paperwork contract to set up the polygon system?
Yes. So you guys are already past that. So there's usually a fairly substantial fee to build that, and then once those are done, people pay for the subscription. So what
this
you're
is
seeing?
Great. Yeah. So you know, so we never got any of that paperwork, and we appreciate the great discount and for the reasons that Battalion Chief Joe presented to us. Could we get copies of that paperwork so we have it in the district? Because, you know, actually it was never really formally agreed to by the board, and yet we paid for it. And just in terms of fiduciary responsibility, you know, somebody's going to ask questions. Can you just send us like the paperwork that you have for these initiating the polygon stuff, just so we have it on file?
I can look. I mean, yeah, I may have to reach out to you, Kevin, to understand exactly what you're asking for, but I will take a look at it. It was something that we had done with you and with, I think, Joe, Chief Kripalo as well.
Yeah. That would be great. Thank you. But we have no paperwork at all in the district. I mean, we have the map, and we have the invoice, and that's the only thing that we have. And I think that we're at risk of, well, it just would be great if we had some more paperwork.
Okay.
And Mary can work that out. That falls in her wheelhouse. Let me see, Don, do you have any questions that we've been kind of dominating?
No, I'm okay.
All right. Larry, how about you?
I'm fine.
And Janice? Because we
I talked to Joe Grupalo about it. I'm aware of it. I'd like to coordinate it with El Cerrito is my concern.
Well, that's one thing I was thinking that, you know, you do have a motion on the table that's been seconded, but perhaps a friendly amendment would be in order to, you know, rather than just adopting the subscription that we were presented with to authorize, I'm thinking authorize Mary, our general manager, to work with Chief Pagoni to come up with the most cost-effective solution for a subscription.
That's fine.
I would like to postpone further discussion of this until we have a bit more, you know, until we all have a chance and anyone else who needs to consider the proposed contract, get the other documents we need, and, you know, do whatever other business we need to do in order to come at this without wasting Charlie's time and everyone else's time. This has been very useful tonight, I think, but I'd like to postpone further work on this.
Well, okay, so there's a lot of stuff floating around here. I'm going to come back to the board because Janice has a motion on the table, and if she'd like to amend her motion, I think we can let her do that.
I'm going
to
amend our motion and ask that we authorize Mary to work with Chief Pagoni and Charlie Crocker to come up with a more specific cost proposal uniting both El Cerrito and Kensington in the project.
And do I have a second for that?
Yeah, I'll second that. I was the second on the original motion as well, I think.
Okay, great. We do have a good question from the public, and I'd like to see if we have any other questions. So, Danielle, this is your question, but I'm going to let you just go. You're still there. I'm going to go ahead and let you just ask your question rather than my reading it, if you're okay with that.
That's fine.
Okay.
My question was, does the program have the ability to update evacuation plans in real time using data as an evacuation is occurring that comes in? And I'm thinking specifically of an evacuation required to a fire post-earthquake where the Hayward moves and you have displacement across some of the main evacuation routes through Kensington and actually Berkeley, including Marin. And does the program have the ability to like put an X there and then reroute traffic in real time?
So we have a deep partnership with Waze. And so we work directly with them. Their traffic data is in our application. And through the Waze interface, we can add what we would consider road blockages. And then those things will show up in the application.
Excellent. And who has the ability to do that? Any of the admin people who have control?
There are different levels of privileges. Some people, like for example, when people call for an evacuation, it's often law enforcement that's responsible for actually calling the evacuation. It may be recommended by fire, but it will be a law that will have the alert capabilities as well. And then other elements within the product, people have what we call editor capabilities, and they can go in and make certain types of changes. Most people really spend their time as a viewer and can run trainings, run simulations, and do, you know, analysis and understanding of their region.
Okay. I think that's it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
I have another hand up from the public. Dave Spath, I'm going to allow you to talk. I think you're unmuted. So are you? Go ahead, Dave. Let me see if we've got you. You should be unmuted. So please go ahead.
Can you hear me, Julie?
Yes.
Yeah, I was just curious as to what's the difference between the standard wildfire module, which this subscription would be for, and the community evacuation interface, which is another subscription that's described in Exhibit A.
So the standard wildfire module is the operational application that is used by LawFire and OES to do the pre-planning, to do training, simulation, and actually run the live alerting. That is connected to the community evacuation interface, which is a public-facing website. So you can go onto the public-facing website, and you can download as somebody in the community information about those your zone, information about routes. It's also a place where the first responders and emergency services personnel can communicate or run drills with you in the community as well. So they're really two different applications. You can run the operational application without ever having the community application. But at this point, we're delivering both as part of the package.
So if you have an event, you would be working off the standard wildfire module as opposed to community evacuation?
So the community would be receiving the information through the community interface, which is, think of it as a website or a mobile application that you have access to. And the standard wildfire module is the space that has much, much more detail that is needed for the first responders and emergency services personnel.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Dave. So I am not seeing any other hands from the public, and we've got a number of items ahead of us. So I would like to return to the board and call the vote on Janice's motion. I vote in favor. Kevin?
I vote against it because I think that we need to, I mean, I think Danielle's comment shows that people in the community have to see what the model looks like before we can, and the board members do, because most board members have not seen what's going on here, and the board members have not clearly had a chance even to look at the contract. I think our attorneys need to look at it. I don't think it's a matter of if the attorneys approve it, it's okay. I think it's way more complex than this. I think we have a great opportunity here, but I don't think it's just as simple as finance. So I'm going to vote no.
Okay. I do assume that the subscription is conditioned upon the attorney's feedback on the contract.
We have not signed anything. So, you know, take a look at the contract. If you have changes, you know, we're happy to discuss what needs to be changed, if anything.
Okay.
But also, I'm saying it's a matter of logistics and what the model will do for us. And I think that, you know, we need to discuss this a bit more to make sure that things will work out okay. The contract is very complex, and I just want to make sure that we can get done what we need to get done with. I mean, I think all the items are there. We just need to have some time, given especially what you said tonight, Charlie, thank you very much, to get better understanding of it.
Don, your vote.
I agree with Kevin.
Okay.
That I'm going to vote no.
You're going to vote no. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's just because things have to be pulled together.
Okay. Janice.
Aye.
Larry.
I'm a little confused here. I thought the motion was to go back and come up with, to have Mary come up with a more refined pricing structure. Was that not the, could you please reread the motion? Because Kevin's comments were as if we were actually voting to accept this contract.
I thought I was voting on what you said, Larry. Maybe Janice, do you want to repeat the motion?
My motion was to authorize Mary to work with Chief Pagoni and Charlie Crocker to work out a mutually agreeable contract with Woodhaven.
Wood Zone, what is it?
Zonehaven.
Zonehaven, yeah, pardon me.
Is there an understanding that Mary would bring back a final contract for our approval then?
Yes.
Okay.
In that case, I vote in favor of the motion.
But I think that, excuse me, Larry, but I think that what Janice said was that we should accept the contract subject to review of the lawyers.
That's not what I said. That's not my motion, Kevin.
Well, I think that was your original motion.
But she amended it.
Yeah, that was like half an hour ago.
Well, the interesting thing is it still only contains legalistic language and financial, not questions about whether the model will actually work and do what it needs to be done for us. which I think we just need to have more discussion on, but I don't think we should commit to paying for something before we understand that. That's why I'm voting no. Because we always have more chances later. This is not like no forever. It's just give us some time to look at this. We only got the contract yesterday, and Larry and I only saw the PowerPoint earlier this week. We have more questions. The rest of the board hasn't even seen it.
So actually, Mary's going to be bringing this back to us. Is that your understanding, Mary? We're going to get a second crack at this. We're authorizing you to work with Chief Pagoni to come up with a mutually agreeable plan, and you'll come back to us.
That's correct.
So if I can, Kevin, what I'm seeing is kind of like we need to get the scope of services and all the details done, and it's more than just money. Are we saying the same thing?
Yeah, I think that's the deal, Donna. I mean, I don't have an objection. I just think, you know, we just need to know more. And, you know, and Charlie's doing the best he can. He's got so many balls in the air with all these things, you know, but we also have to understand how this model works for us, and just to make sure that we can. I mean, I just handed him off today like a crap ton of data, and I don't know how he and his team are ever going to get through it, but I think they will, because they're obviously top people. And integrating this and the other concerns we have into our model can't be unique. I mean, it can't be unique, but we have to make sure, especially with all the changes, because remember, we've never had evacuation plans, so we've never had any kind of model. We're doing a lot at once, and we're doing it very quickly. And, you know, I think that everybody's working in good faith. We just need a little more time to look at this. We only got jammed with this stuff.
Okay, I need to cut this off because we voted, and the motion carried 3-2. Right. And Mary is going to work with Chief Pagoni. If board members have questions and other issues that they would like Mary to sort of flesh out in the process, I think you can go ahead and send your questions to Mary, and she can work it out with Chief Pagoni and Charlie Crocker. But really, this is a like a staff issue for the staff to work out. We are the policy people. And so send your questions to Mary, as we do on other issues, and she'll bring it back to us.
Yes.
All righty.
Thank you for your time. And I appreciate it. Nice to meet you all.
Great okay. job. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll bye-bye. Be in touch.
Okay. So let's see. Mary, are you all reconnected with audio?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Okay. You know, I'm gonna skip over my report, which was gonna be really brief anyway, but I really think that you know, you've got kind of a lot to convey to us, and I wanna make sure we don't run out of time for you and Chief Pagoni. So if you'd like to just please go ahead with your public safety building renovation update, your action plan update, and then I think we can touch on the issue that Janice brought up at the beginning, because there is definitely, I know, a method to your madness. So let me hand it over to you.
All right, thank you. For the public safety building renovation update, I included a staff report. It's just for information, and no action is requested, but I wanted to kind of keep our conversations going and to kind of list out what we've accomplished over the last few months. And a lot of this I already touched upon earlier when I was talking about the estimate for the county evaluation, the ESR 07. But in May, we decided to go forward with that agreement. In June, we had the presentation by RDC. And then also in June, we authorized the general manager to work with the other general manager for cost sharing. And then we have authorized as a precautionary measure for the fire protection district to pay for all the costs and invoice the police protection district if needed. It looks like that won't be needed because there are agreements going forward, but I'll keep the board posted on that. So tonight I have the cost estimate. So I just wanted to go over the rest of what's going on, and then kind of the roadmap that Bill Lindsay and I have been talking about. So for what we're looking at now. So RDC is looking to schedule the meetings with the county. I haven't gotten a date back from them, but I believe it'll be in the next week or so for that county evaluation. They're not sure exactly the timing of when that's going to come back with a response, but in the meantime, Bill and I are still going to continue working on some of the items. Obviously, they'll be dependent upon the decision or information that comes back from the county. But we kind of have a plan for our project discussions, and we're going to be having a conference call either Friday or Monday. So I listed just in basic terms what's going to happen. We're going to be discussing design feasibility, and that'll be a component of the decision that comes back from the county. And then we are going to look at defining, as we talked about, the participation for the police protection district. So kind of defining and establishing the parameters for the police protection district to have a decision point in committing to occupancy of the space in the renovated building so that that doesn't hold the fire protection district up. We'll be looking at cost estimates and allocation. That'll depend upon space that's allocated, if both agencies will be in that building. And then the final cost, of course, will depend upon the bidding, timing, climate, number of bidders, and change orders. But we'll have a solid estimate to work from. Then we're talking about financing and what that would look like. We have some options that we discussed last during our phone conversation, so we'll continue that. We just kind of touched upon them. And then there are other things we need to talk about, which are temporary space and the future lease and what that would look like, and then project management of the actual renovation for the building. So I just really wanted to kind of give the roadmap that, you know, those conversations will continue while we're waiting for answers from the county. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Oh, you're muted.
I just have a couple of questions, and then I bet Don and everybody else has some questions.
Sure.
I just have a couple of, so when I was reading through the minutes, uh-huh, I realized that we had actually authorized RDC to come back to us with a proposal for designing the temporary space for the fire department, which I can't remember, Mary, if we've let you know that the Unitarian Church, which is way up on the hill, uh-huh, they have in principle agreed to let us, the fire department, relocate there.
Okay.
But we need to design, Don has kind of checked it out logistically, and it has all the basic stuff that we need, utilities and, okay, but we need a design.
Okay.
And we authorized RDC to give us a proposal, and they haven't done that yet, as far as I know. And I think that was back in March.
Okay.
So I just wanted to mention that.
But so I think one of the things we have to do is make sure that the architects have the capacity to do the job, because we continually are waiting, or not knowing quite where they are. And so I think, Mary, I think I could be a help if we sat down and went through not just that, but some of the other things that we need to do and how project management is worked out in a project like this. There's a lot of experience I have, and I think it would be helpful, and I'm not planning to be dropping out on you, so you're going to not get rid of me, so let's find a way of working together a little bit.
Well, and the other thing that I wanted to mention, when I read RDC's documents, he keeps referring to having meetings with the steering committee, and I'm not sure who he thinks the steering committee is. we had the whole reason that Don and I started talking to him was because we were the 2x2 committee, uh-huh, and we had hoped to have the first 2x2 committee meeting it with the police board and include the architects. And then, of course, that never happened, and we've rescinded our 2x2 committee. So, I mean, this might be something that we have to deal with at a next meeting or something, but Mallory seems to think that there's a steering committee, and I don't know who that is. So okay, that's probably something that you need to tell him.
Okay.
And then my last...
past the point of what their space might look like and what our space might look like and how much it takes. So there's not an awful lot to talk about. You know, we're by that, I think. So so that part, I think we're okay. So anyway, okay. I mean, Mary, and the other thing I talked about last time was basically speeding up a process where they have to make their mind up. You know, I talked about a 30-day kind of thing. You know, it sounds kind of brutal, but I've got 5 years or 4 years of watching those people do nothing. And I know the manager that you're working with, he's got a great reputation, but on the political side, it's not so easy. And that's why I wanted to basically push the issue. So they have to make up their mind and not get into this. We lost 7 months this week with them going to do this 2x2 thing, and they didn't do anything.
Well, and I'm just really concerned that he hasn't shared the plans with their board yet. I mean, I think two members of their board, Rochelle and Chris, have seen the plans. At least that's what they said at one of our last meetings. But the rest of their board, unless they come to our website or come to our meetings, haven't seen the plans yet. So I just am really worried about whether they're even going to vote to approve this engagement. And if they don't, I mean, I don't know if their general manager understands how much chicken and egg is sort of involved in this whole process. This is just not a simple linear go build a building process.
I think we have to take control. We haven't had control.
Let's see if any other board members have questions for Mary. Mary, you look like you want to talk.
Julie, I would just like to point out again that this board has not approved any plans other than Plan A, which doesn't include the police department. That's the only plan that this board has approved.
Well, we haven't even approved Plan A. I mean, we stopped with... No, we didn't in September. We just agreed to let the architect, Mac 5, do a cost estimate based on Plan A. But we openly said at our meeting that we haven't approved any final... I mean, we aren't ready to go to a construction drawing yet.
Oh, no, but I thought we selected Scheme B in terms of where the police would be a part of.
No, we did not.
About 2 weeks ago.
We have never accepted Plan B, and I will never accept Plan B.
Nor will I.
Well, we did approve the architect to take Plan B to the county to see if we could get the county to waive the elevator. Yeah. We did. It was in the minutes tonight, right, Mary? Yeah. Plan A is still in the running, but Plan B is another option.
We rejected Plan C. That was something we definitively did.
All right. Other questions for Mary on this one? Anybody? Mary, I just want to say that I really appreciate that you're keeping this timeline going in your staff report.
Okay.
I think it helps everybody, not only the board, but I think it helps the community. So thanks for doing that.
Sure, you're welcome. Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. Do you want to give a brief report, then the other part of your report on your action plan?
Yes.
I think we didn't get to do that the last time. We ran out of time.
Yeah. It's the action plan I've gone over with the board and provided in the last meeting. I didn't get a chance to go over it, but essentially the goals listed in the first column are directly from the expectations of the interim general manager from the agreement. What I do is go through and assess, and this is as of this meeting date, what the status milestones have occurred so far, and then what next steps are left or some comments that will give an indication of what the status is. And then I estimate the percent complete of that particular item. And it's not science, it's really looking at what I know, what level of effort I know has gone into it and what's left. So for the first item, that's complete with exception of the invoices that we're following on. With the relations that are with other agencies, that's ongoing, but somewhat 40% complete. With the budget, we have the preliminary budget, the new narrative, and we'll be going to final budget in September. So that's fairly complete, 95%. With the public safety building, we've done a lot with the lease and with the project history, cost allocations that we're going to be working on, and special meetings and my discussions with Bill Lindsay, but there's more obviously to do, so I estimated 40%. And as far as bill payments and other improvements and internal controls, we've done some policy amendments. There are some left to do, so I estimated 40% complete there. With the primary administration on the agreement, there will be more coming with that ongoing, so I estimated that at 20%. Then with the information technology, we had the email migration project that was closed out, but we're still going to be looking at system requirements and maybe a scaled down model of an IT master plan. So estimated 40% there. And as far as the OPEB trust, we have OPEB actuarial proposals. I need to get maybe one or two more before bringing those for approval. We've requested the disbursement for 2019 and 2020. So I estimate that being at 50%. Cost savings, that's going to be ongoing, but I've got some so far with the positions that we've approved or services that we've approved, but we'll be completing the full evaluation and it'll kind of be an assessment of how it needs to work going forward, at least from my perspective. Long-term financial plan is in process. It's been initially started, but there's more work to do on that. So I estimated that at 30%. Records management policy and retention, I've got a list started. PRA request templates, but there's more to do on developing a list of records that the district has, so that's about 40%. And with the certifications, that'll be a next focus. Not much work has been done on that besides identifying some of the needs, so that's 20% complete. And then the final report will be near the end of when I'm through the interim general manager position, and about 40%, I've started noting things that are changed or procedures that will be in place for a new general manager when that occurs. And that's where I am with that. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Hey, any questions from anybody?
Good job.
Thank you.
I agree.
Thank you.
Very organized, very straightforward.
Good. Right. And then, thank you. I can update you on the other question that we had earlier on the policies. So on the policies, I do want to get those before the board. I had started to develop a procedure for getting feedback from the board to complete those policies. They're in near complete form. I just had a couple of questions that I talked with legal about, and then I'll submit those out, collect any questions, and get those back to at a future meeting. I just kind of wanted to lay out a little bit more of a refined process for that. So they'll be coming forward in the very near future at either the next meeting or a special meeting if we have one.
So you're talking about the anti-harassment policy.
Sorry about that. Yes. Yes. The 170, 180, and 185. And those are the anti-harassment. Yes.
All right. Any other questions then? Are we good? Okay. Thank you, Mary.
Welcome.
So I'm just going to say for the president's report, I had written in my president's report just a simple bullet, the on the horizon, defining the roles and responsibilities of board committees versus those of the general manager. And really, I'd like to set the stage for Mary to kind of look at this and talk to us about it. But I'm just finding on my own that I feel like the culture of our board is changing. Having a general manager, albeit interim at the moment, who is the CEO, it has struck me that our committees seem to have been very operational and in some ways to kind of fill in for where our district manager might not have had the time to carry out some projects. And our committees have potentially been more operational than board members should be. So it kind of seems like a good time to sort of step back and redefine what is the role of our committees in relationship to the role of our chief executive officer. And Mary and I haven't really talked about it too much, except to kind of talk about the fact that we need to do this. And so I just wanted to kind of put that out there for everybody that I think this is something that is going to be coming up for us that I think will be a very useful exercise, both for the board and I think also for our interim and our permanent general manager. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chief Pagoni for your report.
Good evening again. So earlier you approved the incident reports for June. The calls within the community of Kensington, they increased by one, but it was a total of 32 calls, which is pretty much the average number of calls happening within the community. As far as total calls that the engine or that the crews responded to, it was a total of 50 calls, which was an increase of six from the month or the previous month. A lot of this with the warm weather, people starting the COVID or the shelter in place starting to open up, you know, more people are out and about. Obviously, you know, some backyard barbecues, some other things going on in the park system. We responded to a few more what we refer to as smoke check or odor check. So, you know, just kind of getting into the busier season with it. We did have one fairly significant call. Thankfully, it wasn't a fire, but or sadly though, it was a fall injury. The engine crew got a call for a fall victim, or actually just came in as a medical. In the, I believe it was the 67 Edgecroft. And when they arrived on scene, they found a person down in the creek below the homes, in essence, between us and Berkeley. A person down had fallen, they were hiking and had slipped on some rocks and fell off a short cliff and injured themselves. This location, in the report I submitted, I had some pictures in there, including a Google Earth picture that kind of showed the line of where the patient was at off of Edgecroft. But it's about 300 feet down, too steep to walk it. And so we requested, we actually had all the engine companies there and set up a rope rescue. Went very, very well. It's not a type of rescue we do that often, but we do train with it. We're able, working with the Kensington PD, to help with what we call hauling, which is, you know, actually pulling on the ropes and using the pulley systems. We were able to package the patient up, get her up the hill, and get her off to the hospital. We actually wanted to fly her out, but due to it getting dark and due to the weather, they ended up doing ground transport to high. I think they went to Highland or Oakland Kaiser, I don't remember which one, but basically they ended up transporting by ground to it. She has recovered fully. As a matter of fact, I think a couple days ago, stopped by the stations and brought everybody cookies. So that's kind of a nice thing. for and a nice thank you letter to us. So aside from that, you heard about the vegetation management from when I did this report. Even quite a few more people have cleared their properties. We went from 90 down to, I forget what it was, 37 or 20, a lot lower number than what we originally had when I did this report for it. We also, through the CERT program, we did another portable water event, sales, whatever you want to call it. Had a very successful, between El Cerrito and Kensington, a number more containers that were purchased by the public. I believe we did, I think we have a total now of like 2,400 of the 5-gallon containers between the two communities. 66, I think it was, 15-gallon containers, and over 100 of the 55-gallon containers. Drop in the bucket of what we should have for the population, but it is a good start for those people that are storing emergency water with them. Aside from that, obviously we keep dealing with the coronavirus with our medical screening. We did have a little bit of a, I guess you'd call it a scare, that one of our neighboring departments in Richmond ended up actually having a positive case within one of the stations a couple days ago. They've put all of those people that were working that day are now in isolation. The engine, not that engine company, but a crew out of that station on Monday had actually been at Station 71 doing coverage while we had a fire up in the Rodeo area. It was none of the same people were there. So, we did not have, until we could do all the contact tracing, we weren't real sure if we had been exposed or not, but luckily we weren't. And so we continue to take the precautions that we are taking. Talking about the fires, as I believe Director Padian was talking, I think he was talking earlier, or one of you were talking about the constant aerial or the constant fireworks that are going off July 4th. Fortunately, no fires in Kensington or El Cerrito, but everybody else had them. So Richmond, Pinole, Rodeo, Central Contra Costa County had, over 100 fires over there, many of them fireworks related for it. And on Monday, there was another fairly large fire up in Rodeo, right off of Interstate 80, in which we ended up sending all three engine companies up there to assist. Went over 200 acres, threatening a number of homes. But, again, our mutual aid system worked well. We had Berkeley to help cover in the Kensington area. Albany had moved across to be at the county line, and then Richmond was backfilling the other stations for us. So, the good thing about it is that, our move-up system does work. And again, this gives us the ability to go help. Engine 65, or actually the Type 3, 365, assisted in putting in about an 8,000-foot hose lay, a very, very, very long hose lay, in the assisting to put the fire out. Or contain the fire. So, great work on all the firefighters and the commitment they made to that. So, aside from that, that is the end of the report. If anybody has any questions.
I have a question, if I may.
Yes.
I understand that there are a lot of the firefighters in Arizona are infected with COVID-19, and I wonder what we can learn from that experience.
that's a great question. I mean, I've heard that they do have a higher rate there. I don't know. I mean, again, and the basic thing that leads to that is lack of proper or wearing proper protection. I have not seen any data come out as to, what they have found there, whether it's people that, are just not following the the mask rules, which is the biggest thing is eye protection and respiratory protection to prevent contracting the virus. But I do not know what they have found down there, but I will look into it for you.
Thank you. I did talk to a couple of the firefighters at the Kensington Station, and they told me that they felt unable to have two people working out in the current gym. And so if they had more than one person working out, they sent one outside and put one in the gym because they didn't think the space was safe for them to work together.
I guess safe is probably as good a word as any. Even within the station, we are attempting to maintain social distancing. It's difficult to work out while you're wearing the masks. And so what they have been doing is, trying to stagger workout time. Or as you know, if you've looked behind the station, you see things like tires and pieces of telephone poles that they like to lift and work with. So one person, they'll trade off, one person works out inside, one person works outside. We've also, just due to lack of room, we have the treadmill and I believe the stationary bike, which is up in the TV room, so it does give us the ability to spread out. The past practice, which in the main, it's in the electrical room where the weight machine is, past practice has been, all of them to work together, one spotting the other one. And, one takes a turn, the other two take a rest and they kind of cycle through. So we've had to work around that, but, we're making it work. It's difficult. Yes.
So we have 4 minutes left, according to the time on my computer, until 10 o'clock. So if we have further questions for Chief Pagoni, and if any of the other board members want to give their reports, I would like a motion to extend the meeting for 15 minutes.
I make a motion that we extend the meeting
until 10:15.
Until 10:15.
Do I have a second?
I might make it, and I might not.
Is that a second?
I'll say no.
All right. Okay, I have a motion by Larry, second with Kevin. I vote in favor. Kevin?
Yes, I'm hoping it only takes 5 minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, Don?
5 minutes.
Janice? Donna, take that as a yes.
More than 5 minutes also.
And Larry?
I vote yes.
Mary, is that you have 3 yeses for sure? I don't know about the other 2.
They said 5 minutes, which wasn't your 15 minutes.
But Larry's motion was 15, and Kevin and I and Larry all voted yes. So I think you have 3 yeses for 15.
Yes.
So
Janice and I are out here at 5 minutes after. So yeah. Yes.
Do any other board members have any questions for Chief Pagoni? I just have a comment, Janice. I don't know how you find so much time to be interacting with the firefighters when you claim that other board members shouldn't be. So I think that this is something as a board that we should look at. Your opening comment tonight was you claim to be representing all these concerns that the firefighters have. You're now representing other concerns that the firefighters have, yet you feel that all the rest of the board members shouldn't be interacting with the firefighters.
Other board shouldn't be interacting with firefighters. I run into them when I go pick up my packet.
I got an email from you where you said that you don't understand why the other board members would be interacting with any other than battalion chiefs. So I think that our general manager can work with Chief Pagoni on this issue because I think it needs to be a level playing field. And Mary, so anything else for Chief Pagoni? Mary, I had a follow-up question, and I'm sorry for your report. I hope it's quick. Have they signed the lease yet for the public safety building? Because my name is on it. Nobody's given me anything to sign.
So I asked Bill about it, and they did approve it. He said he was collecting signatures, so I'm going to be talking to him again this week, so I will find out where they are with it.
Okay. All right. Great. Emergency preparedness. Do you have a quick report? Kevin, you're muted.
Could I just say, in the interest of time, the minutes explain what we did in May, and the up-to-date report explain what we did in June. We're continuing, and I think we're just continuing. Larry, do you have anything to add to that?
No.
We're just getting great help and great cooperation. It's just really going ahead in all cylinders.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, we had a hand raised. Mabry, did you still want to make a comment on Chief?
Yes. I missed the water container last year, and I did not see anything about this chance to buy them again this year, and I'm not sure exactly where it was publicized. And of course, it could be operator error on my part, but well, I would like to see better notification and hope that will happen again next year.
I do believe they're planning. This is the third one in less than a year, so I am most certain that they will have one, maybe even before the end of this year.
Is there a way to get on a list to be notified?
I believe the, because it's done through the La Mirinda's CERT team or CERT group, I believe they do have a way, but let me look into that and I will find out. And if you, and you can email me outside of this, I believe we may have some spares or extras that may have showed up if there's some that you are interested in.
Yes. I will email you and we can arrange what can be arranged. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both.
And also, may I just said with respect, we have Chris Hilliard on board who's supposed to be coordinating CERT for El Cerrito and Kensington, and he's a huge exponent of this, and maybe we could find a better way for Chris to get into the communications channel so that more people could learn about it.
Definitely.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, in the spirit of 5 minutes, California Special District Association County. Larry.
Yes, there is a joint meeting of the Alameda County and Contra Costa County Special Districts Associations, Monday, July 14th. So everyone should have received an invitation. If they haven't, I will forward the invitation to all board members. It starts at 9 o'clock with a sort of breakout room just for people affiliated with fire districts. Well, there's six different breakout rooms. The one we'd be interested in would be the fire districts. And then the regular meetings is at 9:30, and it encompasses. It's a joint meeting. It encompasses problems. I think it'd be very worth your while to tune in. Obviously, it's a Zoom meeting. It's not in person.
Thank you, Larry. Janice, State Professional Development and Member Services Committees.
Yeah, I went to both the meetings in June. And one thing they talked about is having a number of new professional development opportunities related to COVID-19, and all of those webinars are free. So check on those. You might take a look and see what their website has that might be of interest to you.
Excellent. Thank you. And so we completed our agenda. Thanks to everyone. Let me see. There's Mabry, your hand is still up. Is that intentional or no?
Are you talking?
We had one hand up, but I think she spoke already. I thought I lowered her hand. Anyway, I think we are ready to adjourn. Don, we did it in 3 minutes instead of five.
Yeah,
so thank you, everyone. Our meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.